Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. I had forgotten how cold this place gets during the... I mean, we're not even in the winter yet. I was going to do winter with inverted commas with my fingers, but it's getting chilly again, isn't it?
Well, it's not too bad.
Oh, no, it is.
Today.
It's because you're wearing a gilet.
I've got three layers on. Yeah,
that's exactly... I have not prepared.
And, are you cold?
Yeah, I'm already cold. It's just this November. We've got so long to go. Anyway, well, yeah, if you're new to the podcast, if season five is the first season you've tuned into and you haven't seen previous episodes from STGHQ, you won't know that, yeah, during the winter it becomes arctic in here. And usually we can see our own breath as we talk and record. We usually sort of... The layers increase as the months go on, and oh, it's all a bit depressing. But anyway, we're here freezing to bring you the latest car news and car chat from the world. A few things to get through first, bit of housekeeping. We've got some new patrons.
Have we?
Love our patrons.
Thank you.
Yeah, so shout out to, I'm going to say Prit Ver. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Prit, I don't know where you're from. Said that. I mean, I'd have got that really wrong.
It's why I read them out, because there are some names that I'm like, I don't want Tony having a go with that. Kenny Blair, that's an easy name for you. Howard Dawson, Clive James Austin, and Miles Cloninger.
Well done, boy.
Yeah, so we love our patrons. Thank you so much for those of you that have joined up. And off the back of an episode a few weeks ago, which was a very popular episode, so huge thanks to all of you that have sent messages and DMs for the YouTube special episode.
Oh, I've got loads and loads as well.
Really great. People loved your hosting, by the way. I kind of feel like I should sit back more often and let you just run the... I was like, how nice. Yeah, great. Tony can step up to the plate a few more times. But I will bravo you as well, because you really, you know, you came into your own little Parkinson over there. But we set ourselves this goal of 50k by the end of the year.
I mean, we have got some, I'll check, mate. We have got some more.
Oh my God, we're flying. We're like 45,700 or something like that.
Are we?
Yeah, so we gained like 700 subscribers off that one episode. So yeah. Huge thanks to all of you. If you're a new subscriber, welcome. We love you as much as we love our patrons. If you haven't subscribed yet, if you're like, I'll do it at some point, do it now.
Please.
Do it now, because we've set ourselves this goal and we've announced that we're going to do something crazy and wacky, and we actually kind of think we've figured out what that's going to be. It only if we hit 50K by December 31st.
Oh, right. December, that's the definitive day, is it?
Yeah, end of the year.
Right.
So that's our goal.
Okay.
Now, a couple of things I wanted to discuss with you, and I don't know where to start. Let's kick things off with a video that went live on my channel yesterday, which you won't have seen yet, because I'm fully aware you don't watch my content. Thanks for the support, Tony. But it is worth discussing further. I did 500 miles in a Nissan Leaf.
Oh, right. So I know a little bit about this, because... You were flapping at me while you were doing it. But
well, I was flapping a lot beforehand.
You were.
And I was flapping during, but okay, so let's explain this a little bit more to set up the scene.
How'd you get on?
Well, no, I'm gonna give a bit more pretense before I get into it. So this is part of Shell. In that big YouTube episode, I talked about the fact that Shell and one of my longest partners do some awesome content together.
When did you get them on here?
Yeah, I don't know which. I don't know who from Shell. So I recently did some stuff at the Hamburg Motorsport Center where they develop all the stuff for Ferrari.
Yeah.
And they were fascinating, and they were talking a lot about future fuels and synthetic. And that I think maybe they would be the most interesting. But the piece I was doing for the main channel, the last couple of videos, have been focusing on how Shell embraces the world of EVs. Because as a fuels company, they can't really just sit back and just ignore EV and be like, oh no, we'll figure something else out. So they're having to sort of, you know, embrace it. And
where's their HQ?
Well, the Motorsport HQ is in Hamburg. I don't know where the Shell HQ is.
We can go there and get someone there, go to their office.
That would be cool.
We could just do that.
We'll get one of the Ferrari fuel scientists on.
That's what we need, mate, because, you know, we can go in and really go in about this new synergy fuel that we
synthetic,
think...
Synthetic.
Yeah, well.
I think that's the rival brand from another... Anyway, sorry. Definitely not synergy. Sorry, Shell. So, yeah,
synthetic fuel that we think is going to be rolled out on, you know, it's going to... in F1 and then be rolled out into performance cars, we think.
I was there, as I say, to talk about sort of, you know, V-Power and the stuff that goes into the Ferrari's car and stuff like that. And literally every time the camera turned off, I turned to the lovely woman who runs the shop there and I was just like, so tell me about synthetic fuels. She was like, should we be having this conversation?
Anyway, yes, please.
Yes, please. So, you know, Shell trying to also, you know, embrace the world of EV and figure out what that means for them. And they're rolling out all these recharge points at various stations, things like that. So this was kind of me slightly opening myself up to the world of EVs, letting Shell sort of try and introduce what they're doing, and also, I guess, as a campaign, show that off to the audience.
Yeah.
Now, they're fairly relaxed and fairly chilled and want it to be a fairly authentic experience. Like, people know that, actually, I really like a lot of EVs today. I think a lot of the electric vehicles are becoming quite incredible. You know, everything from an Audi e-tron to the Nissan Leaf that I was using for this campaign. It was unbelievable. I think 35 grand, every bit of tech equipment and kit that you could ever want. It was the extended range version. Now, this is a city car. This is supposed to be something to use for your shorter commutes and in and around the city. So it's not really a long distance EV, but that was, again, the whole point. Like, can I do this? I was slightly hand-tied because obviously I was using Shell recharge points only. There are tons of other recharge points I could go to, and we'll come back to that later, but at least for the campaign, and specifically we were trying to highlight how Shell are increasing their number of recharge points available, blah, blah, blah.
They've got to,
exactly. So it's like with a lot of these things, they are still sort of at the start or the early part of their journey.
Like everyone else.
Yeah, there's tons of points still to come. So... let's think about the... So all in all, actually a surprisingly good experience. I would say much better on the way up to... I went up to Amari because we were having a meeting about a Ferrari, actually. But anyway, more on that later. And then come back down. So it's just like, you know, I've done that trip so many times. Just gone up to Amari and come back down. So on the way up, I was pooping myself. I was like, oh, this is going to be hell. How am I going to manage the battery levels? And I've got to drive so slowly. And when am I going to run out? And I'm going to have to pull over 4 hours. It'd be a nightmare.
What do Nissan say the Leaf does range?
230 miles. I got in the car here at STG HQ. 100% battery. Nice, cold, crisp morning. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, cold, or I'm still confused by...
So if it's cut, apparently, I know people that have got electric cars, if it's cold, they do less.
Oh, right. Okay, well, so I turned on, it said 230 miles.
Right.
But, driving out through town, that depleted, oh my God, so quickly.
As soon as you got on the motorway, or did you have heaters on? Or?
I had everything on, because I wanted to go, you know, it's early that's morning, I got a long drive, you know, I wanted to have a heated seat on at one point, I had the music blasting, you know, I was just
and,
using
and
like
so
a normal
you should.
Car. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think Shell had provided like a load of their sort of recharge network and said, here are some good points and here's some accessible stuff. So I was using that to sort of plan my journey. And I thought, right, conservative, let's go 180 miles. If the range is 230, let's recharge in 180 miles. Let's crack on and get out of town. By the time I was out of London, that was already not going to be possible because my range was down to 185 or something like that.
And you was in London as well.
It burnt up through London quickly.
Yeah.
So definitely anxiety at that point. The minute I hit the motorway, loving life.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I was just cruising along, totally fine. I wasn't driving aggressively slowly. I had my music on. Yes, the range is coming down and that does give you a bit of anxiety because it's, you know, once it's gone, it's gone. So you do have to think ahead.
Mm.
So I realized like I'm not going to make that initial point. So I pulled over, shall I have a good recharge app? So I was on there and I found another point that was 30 miles close, something like that. Pulled in, Literally, first time doing it, rocked up, charged straight away, bish, bash, bosh.
How long did you wait?
So on that occasion, I think in total, 45 minutes.
Right. To back to 100% or 80?
93%. Right. So from 24-ish to 93%.
Because they normally, EVs, like your mobile phone, they'll charge quickly to 80 or 90%, and then that last 10 or 15% is really slow because you have to protect the battery.
Exactly. So at this point, I'm like, okay, yeah. I was fully prepared to have to wait. Okay, yeah. Like, of course, when you do that as a direct comparison against an internal combustion engine car, that's an incredibly long amount of time, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
But I was going at this from I'm seeing what it would be like to do a long distance EV road trip in a car that's not really designed to do it. I'm going to have to sit around. But by the time I'd gone into the shop, you know, bought a drink and a snack, done a little bit of editing of the footage on the way there. I was like, oh, I'll just go and check and see how I'm getting on. I was like, oh, wow, breezy. Okay. Right,
so I've got a couple of questions for you. What was the miles at 93% when you got back in?
The range.
The range, yeah.
Oh, God. See, I filmed all this about a month and a half ago. Probably 180-odd miles.
Fair. And what did you pay?
Okay, so let me just bring up the exact number. I think it's 47p per kilowatt. So it's a blanket charge. So
across the board.
Yeah, across the board. So any Shell recharge station is always, doesn't matter what you're plugging in, it's the same. No, it's a recharge cost. Let's see, so yeah, 41p per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
So I think, and I should have watched my video back before we start talking about this, I think I spent, was it 35 quid the whole day? I think I spent around 30, I think the first one must have been 18 or 19. Like, yeah, I think I spent like 35 or 40 quid across the whole day. That's there and back.
There and back. Okay, how many charges?
2.5. We'll come back to the half in a second.
Right, so one up and one back. Did you charge at Amari?
No. So, okay, well, let's keep going because the money thing is we've got to talk about at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So so far, so good in the grand scheme of an EV trip.
Yeah.
So up I go, get to Amari. As I'm leaving Amari, I think, okay, I'm going to have to charge again. I can't make it home. I think I had a maybe 80-mile range and 40-odd percent battery leaving Amari. It's 45% battery. So I think, okay, well, I've got to find a spot. I'm looking at my thing again. I find a spot. I'm like, okay, cool, let's head there.
We probably better tell the audience, by the way, is how many miles is it from here to Amari?
Oh, 500 miles direct, so it's 234 miles from here to Amari and then 234 is back.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So this is where I started to get a little bit more, well, not frustrated. Okay, so on the way, I pull in at the next recharge point off the motorway, easy peasy, service station, and there's one recharge point and somebody's in it. So I'm like, this is interesting.
Did you have some left?
No. So I'd gone aggressive at this point. Right. I think I was down to, it was too aggressive to go anywhere. I think I had 18 or 22 mile range, right, something like that. And you know, low percentage.
You got to wait.
So I pull in, I think, you know, this is part of the experience, right?
Yeah.
And also like, what's the etiquette? Do I like go and knock on his window and be like, how long you got left, mate? Or do I go and look at the screen and see how, so I didn't really know, but I was like, this is really interesting to film.
You haven't really got a choice at 80 miles, mate. I mean, there's no point knocking on his door anymore. Well, you just got to wait.
But this is the whole thing, right? So I'm there and it gets to about 15 minutes of waiting and I'm thinking, maybe I should see if I can find somewhere else. And of course, for the content, I'm looking for other Shell recharge points. I'm sure I could have jumped on and found another recharge point locally, but for the content, I'm trying to help promote Shell and their network. The next point was either to go back up north, so 45 minutes back upwards, or...
With 18 miles of range.
Yeah, or the point south was too far. So I was stuck. I had to wait.
Yeah.
So fine. And, you know, I say, because I was looking specifically for Shell points... So I wait, and the guy pulls out after maybe 20 minutes in total.
Right.
So not awful, bit annoying, but not awful. Mercedes EQS. It was a woman, so sorry.
EQS?
EQS, I think.
Or C?
You tell me.
Well, I don't want to do both.
Yeah, I think that's... I don't know. It's a Mercedes.
Okay. I like them, by the way.
I pull straight in, plug in, and as I plug in, a very lovely man in a ID4 something like that pulls in behind me. He goes, oh, you just plugged in. I went, yeah. He goes, okay, I'll wait. And I was like, oh, sucks for you, mate, because I literally just plugged in, so you're going to be here a while.
And I'm low.
But also, that gives me a little bit of anxiety. I was a little bit like, oh, God, now he's waiting over my shoulder. So I went in, I got magazine this time. I was sort of a bit more like, but at the same time, I was a bit like, okay, I do kind of want to get home now. So on the way up, it was all part of the fun and the adventure. This time, because I'd waited 20 minutes, and then I was like, okay, fine. But, you know, but still, I was going with it. I wasn't.
How long did you wait?
So this was the killer one. So this was a slower charging point. After 75 minutes.
Oh no.
I was up to 84%.
Oh no.
Yeah. So at this point, what I was doing throughout that 75 minutes, because the guy was waiting, I kept getting up being like, oh, just gonna check. Oh no, still not there. Like, you know, I did all the acting. Like,
did you give it all the old arms?
Yeah. Oh, tapping my watch. Oh, sorry. Like, you know, like trying to show that I was making some kind of effort to speed it up. Obviously, there's nothing I could do and I wasn't going to go anywhere.
Like Rick Mao out of bottom.
Yeah. But at that point, I was like, okay, 84%. I feel like I've waited long enough. I'll get cracking. I'm sure I'll be fine. That was my mistake. And this is it's a learning process, right? This is a learning process. But at that point, I was like, I want to get cracking.
Oh.
So off I go. And as I get to around the Beaconsfield services, so around the M25, for those who don't know, I'm probably, what, 35 minutes outside London at that point?
Yeah.
I start to go, yeah, I'm not going to make it. I start to think, I'm going to need to charge again.
Oh.
So at this point, I just literally find the nearest charger.
It's probably one in Beaconsfield, right? Shell one?
Into Beaconsfield. Beaconsfield Shell doesn't have one. They've got an independent charging point in the services. The actual Shell doesn't. I think that one's got a hydrogen at that Shell. Maybe that's a different... Anyway. Pull in and they're all taken at the services. So I'm like, oh, bloody hell. So then I find another charging point. I have to drive down the road. And I find a charging point and I plug in. And it's quick and it works and it's great. It's fine. I'm there for, I don't know, another 15 minutes maybe? Watching something on YouTube or something like that. And I go, right, okay. Off we go, ready to rock and roll home. So to be fair, the actual charging process, very easy. The time, not so. And I roll into the studio with something aggressive, 5 or 6% left on the battery.
Right.
And probably, I reckon, 2.5 hours later than I would have in a combustion engine car.
Well, easily, because you're 75 minutes and 45 minutes and 15 minutes, nearly 3 hours.
Okay, well, yeah.
It's 3 hours.
On the video, I said 2.5, so maybe I've got my numbers wrong now, yeah. But whatever it is. It was about 2.5 hours later than I would have in... because, you know, I would have stopped for fuel and... Anyway, boring. So, I left that evening going, okay, things that I've learned. EVs are getting better and better and better. That was a city-based EV with a sort of range extender, which handled the journey like a breeze. I was in comfort, it was easy, it was relatively affordable. The car was fantastic. The recharge network or points, super easy to use. I could always find a Shell recharge point, connecting the connector, super easy. Paying was the easy, because remember I'd had that e-tron like a year and a half ago, and yeah. I had to have membership card, and that was a killer. So the fact I could literally just turn up, tap my credit card, and off I go, it's charging. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
The killers, which I think we can't look past yet, and are still the obvious frustrations, the length of time. Even though I was prepared for it and I went into that day knowing it was going to take a minimum a couple of hours longer, it's still hard to adjust to as a combustion engine driver.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the cost, I think Shell are one of the most aggressively priced charging points in the UK. I think they're very competitively priced, but it's still not a massive saving. So I text you a few days later saying, how much do you think it would have cost to do that trip in a Golf GTD? And you reckon a full tank would be about 70 quid and it probably would have used 3/4 of a tank to do that journey?
Yeah, it would have been a little bit more than 35 quid, but I would have thought it'd probably been 40 quid.
Okay, fine,
but you'd have done 40 quid in fuel in an equivalent, say, Golf GTD.
Sure. So the money, there's not really necessarily a saving there in terms of money, I don't think, unless you're looking at, like me, who's cruising on the X3 M40i, I probably would have needed 2 tanks of fuel and that is 80 quid. And so, you know, over a... But that's not what a Leaf competes with.
Yeah, it's not a city car. Yeah,
It's a city car, and it's an entry level city car, not a big, you know, X3 M40i.
The thing is, as well, mate, is that in general, a normal city car. I know we're diversifying in terms of it's a city car, but a normal city car would quite happily go at Preston on back on similar fuel, and you wouldn't have to stop. So I don't really. I know that they're saying they're for the cities. They need to be not for the cities as well, because a normal combustion engine city car will do both.
Yes, and I suppose it's all an interesting way of doing it, because yes, you're right. You need to have a car that can basically do everything. And I think I feel like I proved that the Leaf could do everything. The car was definitely not the frustration for me. The car, absolutely fine. The charging time, and that car doesn't have, it doesn't do the 100 kilowatts. So I think the maximum, I don't know what the maximum charge is, 50 kilowatts? So again, if I was in a Taycan or a Tesla, it would have been much quicker, the whole process.
Yeah. You're not on a 35 grand city car though, are you? You're in a 150 grand sports car.
Sure. So charging capability.
Yeah.
And yeah, the length of time, you know, that it takes. Those two things, whilst I can see that the network has improved, because over the 12 or 18 months since I had that e-tron experience that really stressed me out so much, I can already see that there's a massive step forward in infrastructure.
And actually, do you know what? On that particular day that you said, you've had a bit of luck, mate, because if you're that ID4, like you said, you're waiting another 75 minutes.
And I had the help where Shell were holding my hand through the whole thing. So they sent me a lot of notes, they sent me a lot of tips, go here, do that, and blah, blah, blah. So it was kind of one of those weird experiences where I walked away from it going, actually, in the grand scheme of things, that really wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Would I jump across and do it now? No, I still don't feel ready to do that. But it definitely quashed a lot of my concerns and fears, I think.
Yeah.
And more, as I look at London, I'm like, would I prefer to have an electric Fiat right now? Would I like to have a little electric Mini just for pottering around to and from?
What made no difference?
I don't think it'd make any difference. No. It's just those longer journeys. And as all of these providers increase their network and their infrastructure, it will infinitely get better. So I'm still on the fence. I know you're still negative. I'm still on the fence. But it swayed me slightly more to the, okay, this could work in the future. I still don't think it's the final answer.
Well, it's definitely getting better, as you've just experienced, for sure. But for me, I'm not in, because unlike a combustion engine car, it works for everyone in every single scenario. Once electric or EV cars get to that point, I'm in.
Sure.
You know, I don't see it being a problem, because it's still a car. Okay, you take the emotion out of it, there's not going to be any noise and whatnot, but these modern cars are a lot quieter than they used to be anyway. And I am a petrol head, but actually for every day, I'm driving a BMW X5 at the moment. If that car done 500 miles of range like it does on diesel, I'd be quite happy bombing around in an electric car. And if I can charge it in 5 minutes, like I can fill it up in 5 minutes, no problem.
Yeah.
But you can't. So therefore, it doesn't work for... It works for a lot of people, but it doesn't work for everyone. So therefore, it's not as good.
Yeah. And so for me, if we're going to do one thing on this podcast now, if we're going to do, I don't know, put pressure in any area, get spokespeople on, it is purely infrastructure focused for an EV side of things. Because I actually think electric vehicles now are increasingly very good.
Well, they are getting better for sure. There is something that you obviously sent me the other day as well about the climate on and how EVs are built. I think that's the direction I think we should focus on a bit more now. Not the fact that we should focus on infrastructure and actually, are they actually saving the planet? All things considered, are they actually saving the planet? Because if they're not actually saving the planet and they're not as good as a combustion engine car, what's the point?
Yeah, I think it was a Bloomberg article, I think, which basically talked about the environmental impact of creating an electric vehicle is actually starting to become a little bit carbon ineffective. As in, I think they use a lot of aluminium to try and, you know, keep the cars light and you know, the aluminium resource of the creation of all these things is having a negative effect on carbon emissions.
Yeah.
Something that I guess we've known about for a while. There's obviously this big sort of push and agenda. And by the way, this was not supposed to be an EV special this episode. We're going to move on relatively quickly, but I just wanted to address all this. Yes, all of that still needs to be assessed, you know, and I think I still feel it's definitely not the solution. It feels like it could be part of the solution in the city. I still think inner city driving, EVs only, sure. And then we're going to get to a point with hybrids where you can just switch on your hybrid mode to get into the, you know, congestion zone or whatever it might be. Like, anyway, so I see that. But I think fundamentally, I'm thankful that Shell allowed me to do the piece and were fairly relaxed about how I presented it.
Yeah.
Of course, some people picked up and said, oh, you know, it's a bit of a sales ad. But of course, there's going to be a sales element to it because they're funding the content. I mean, it's the whole partnership. But they were, as ever, always fairly relaxed and open and wanted me to sort of have an honest truth and opinion. And that was my walkaway, is that if they can do what they're saying they're going to do, add their 150,000 charging points over the next X number of years, then great. That's what we need to make EVs work. In the meantime, let's hope and see how synthetic fuels are keep being developed, hydrogen, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, there's stuff going on.
Hydrogen's coming, mate, as in...
For sure.
You know...
More noise about it than ever.
Loads and loads of noise. And as we've said in the past, we really do think that heavy, good vehicles, planes, boats, that's how they're going to be powered eventually, because they cannot be electric. That's just,
for sure.
You know, that's we can't get away from that. And going back quickly, I know you want to come off the topic, but going back very quickly on EVs being carbon neutral at the minute or whatever they are, they don't make any compared to petrol cars. As in, you know, as a percentage, there's 130 million petrol combustion engine cars. There's 250,000 electric cars. As they ramp production up, the carbon neutral is going to go through the roof, obviously.
Yeah, so it's a swing or a swear, isn't it? What was that stat I sent you, which said that I think it's a quarter of all carbon emissions in the world, or less than a quarter, come from transport, which includes planes, boats, everything.
Mm.
And of that, 11% is passenger vehicles, I think. So 11% of the quarter. So, you know, it's still a lot of other things that need to be looked at. We're now wading into climate change and politics. So we'll steer away. But anyway.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Thank you for those of you that have watched the Shell episodes. Thank you for those who found it interesting. I just wanted to talk through it in a bit more detail. Let's shift lanes quite aggressively.
Talk about the
F1. Yeah. Hey, still hybrids. Talk about the F1 quickly, because there's no after the chequered flag this episode, this week. So Paul and I combining in a boring story. So long story short, has Max just won the championship?
I mean, I'm no expert like you two, but
keynotes,
and you do know your stuff, the pair of you. First of all, everyone was jumping on about how he got to turn one and how he outbraked them. One, I think, because he was on the racing line. Yeah, he did break a bit later, but he could break a bit later because of where he was on the track. The Mercedes cars couldn't break that late because the corner tightens up when you're on the inside. It's just physics, you can't do anything about that. But it pains me to say it. I mean, that Red Bull over the last few races has just really come on, and I think Mercedes might have lost their way a bit. And, you know, ultimately, the driver, there's not many drivers that could have done that down to turn one. Max is an outstanding driver, by the way, and so is Lewis. They're the two outstanding drivers, and we can see that because Perez is in the same car. He finishes 20 odd seconds behind Max, and he couldn't get past Lewis. So they're the two outstanding drivers for sure. And if either one of them have got the best car, they're going to win the race. It's, you know, we can't get away from that. If it's anyone else, we've seen Bottas, Perez, Ocon, they can't keep up with them two. What about the race before where them two just drove off?
Yep.
So, listen, I think Lewis, this is slightly annoying me because I have actually got a bet on
I know
Lewis
you do.
Winning the championship.
You're screwed, mate. Not with me, by the way, people. Yeah.
I think Lewis now has got to win all four races or something terrible has got to happen to Max not to win.
As the biggest Lewis fan, I actually think if Max now got a DNF or got taken out of the race by someone not Lewis, I don't think it would feel like a wholeheartedly justified championship victory. I agree, Lewis has to win all four races.
Yeah.
Has to.
Yeah.
And but within that, I do feel like we're getting to this point where Max does feel like he has earned that championship.
But not mostly. If Lewis wins all next four races, mate, because he's then...
Agreed.
He's done well then, but if it's a DNF like you said,
that's what I mean. If Lewis wins next four and Max comes second and then that ends up with Lewis, yeah. Great, done, happy
yeah.
days.
Yeah.
But if there's a dodgy DNF from an engine failure, Bottas taking out Max, anyone taking out Max, and that sways the championship, I think it would feel a bit like Max has lost that rather than Lewis has won it. Because, you know, at this point now in the season, he's becoming so dominant, Max, and is so in his stride. And I slightly disagree. I mean, the point about turn one at Mexico, yes, he sailed around and he's on the racing line and he could afford to do all of that. But the confidence and the balls to do it, because you've got so many cars streaming up your inside. If one of those guys misses their braking point or locks a wheel, they're plowing into the side of you. They are completely plowing into the side of you. So to have the thought at that moment of, I'm just going to send it and just have that confidence and just fly around the outside, it is that sort of mentality of, this is what I'm doing.
I'm going, yeah. But don't forget, mate, as well, is that he is outstanding. Like I said, with Lewis, they are, but I mean, quite a lot of the pundits, even the racing drivers, they say they're the greatest two drivers ever. And Max is going to do what Lewis has done, and he's going to dominate the sport. And like I said to you last week, if it's not for Lewis this year,
there's no fight.
There's no championship.
Yeah, yeah.
Max just drives off.
Yeah, Max would have walked away with it. You know, you're right in that sense. And all I hope is, because Lewis, I think, has come out and said, and we've known for a while, that Mercedes haven't really developed that car since Silverstone. So there's been no upgrades because, like all teams, they're changing their focus to next year with these huge rule changes. I hope for Max's sake, for the sport's sake, Red Bull haven't gone too Hail Mary on this year and then are going to end up with a weak car next year, because you do get the sense that they've seen this opportunity. They've been the challenger, the contender for a few years now, knocking on the door, and they're thinking, right, this is our chance. We have to win this championship now, because we don't want to risk 2022 onwards. We don't want to give this in and go, oh, we'll just get the next year, because this huge rule change, who knows who's going to come out on top? You know, Alpine might have just gained 2.5 seconds over everyone.
Yeah.
So might as well go all in now.
Ferrari could be back. McLaren.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Hey, look, let's see what happens. Four races to go. It's been an undeniably amazing season, but it does feel like Max is now on his way to securing that championship.
But it also does emphasise, by the way, how good Lewis actually is, because all year he's been in the worst car. He's nearly 37. He's still at the top, and he's only 20 points away from... Normally, when Lewis is in the best car... He wins the championship by 150 points. I mean, he just drives off. Yeah. So the fact that he's still hanging in, and it's undoubtedly, you can't deny that Red Bull isn't the best car. I mean, it won by nearly 20 seconds.
Oh, yes, it was a joke.
It was a joke. Yeah.
But so, I think more of a joke, and we always like to trigger the Max fans here and the Lewis haters, but Lewis's defense of P2, because with what, 15 laps to go, 20 laps to go, it was down to 2 seconds with Perez, and you were like, oh, that's it, that's done, that's not happening. How he held on to that, I'm not quite sure. Yeah, that was
brilliant.
Anyway, let's move on, because we've got some car news to discuss.
Unbelievable.
Things have been happening. Things have been happening. Who knew? This episode has not gone at all the way that I expected it to, but life is life. Did you know Aston Martin have delivered a Valkyrie? Actually, I don't know if they've delivered it, but the first customer car has rolled off the production line.
Oh, that doesn't mean it's been delivered.
No, it doesn't. But we never thought this day was coming, Tony.
Well, first of all, apart from the amount of stick that I actually give Aston Martin, well done for getting it off the line. And actually, let's hope that the customer who's having the car actually enjoys it, and it's not going to be another Aston Martin, basically.
What does that mean?
Well, that it's actually going to work and the bloke's going to enjoy it. He's paid £2 million for it, by the way. Yeah. And he paid...
And waited 5 years ago.
He waited 5 years and he probably paid half of that 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So let's really hope that the wait, it's been well worth the wait.
I hope so too. I think the thing looks mega. I've always been excited about the Valkyrie, but we have joked about just how long it's taken and whether it would actually ever finally, you know, roll off the production line. Theoretically, the first customer car has and production is now fully up and running. It kind of came out of nowhere because obviously there's been a huge amount of testing and development and we've seen all these kind of spy shots and YouTube videos and Goodwood and all this stuff like that. And then suddenly it's just like, oh yeah, here it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't really seen any kind of press, not that I guess they need press for that car.
Or sold.
Well sold, so why would you? But yeah, it was a surprise, I think, to a lot of people that suddenly this announcement came out. And I'm so with you. Let's hope we see them on the road, on the track, being used. Because what a thing that they've actually gone out and made.
Imagine seeing one around the track. Oh my. Coming, batting past you. Oh my God.
But here's my question, and we'll find this out, I guess, soon enough. We often talk about, you know, very rich people or anyone who really wants to go hard on track. Road cars can only get you to a certain level.
Of course.
Doesn't matter, even if you're in a Senna, at some point you need to be in a race car. You need slicks and wings and you need lightweight, all these different elements. And a friend of mine who had a Senna, after a while was like, I'm now pushing it so hard, I'm limited by the tyres. Yeah. Like I'm limited by the, you know, I need to be
by
in
the setup of the car.
650S GT3, because I'll be so much quicker. Yeah, so the Valkyrie is still a road car.
Mm.
And I know they've got the AMR version, but is it going to get to a point where these very rich people are going to love it and enjoy it for what it is, but go, I'd rather be in
a race car.
Vantage GT3 or whatever it is.
Yeah. It will actually be interesting to see, and I'm sure it's going to happen, if someone takes one to Silverstone and actually bats around Silverstone flat out and see how quick it actually is. As in, is it really as fast as a GT3 car? Because we know for a fact it'd be faster than a straight line, but like you said, the road car has got to be made for everyone.
It's going to be limited somewhere.
It has to be limited. It can't be a race car because you couldn't drive it on the road. So, you know, there is going to be that point where it's going to hit a brick wall, essentially.
I would assume.
Not literally.
So. Let's hope not. Oh, God. Okay, so moving on, fresh off the back of our SUV special, we're expecting to see the 2022 BMW X8 M. At the end of this month, 750 horsepower SUV with a hybrid version of the thumping V8.
X8?
Yeah, so this is an X7 Plus, basically.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, it's basically taken... It's going to be a slightly modified version of an X7.
Right, okay.
But, I mean...
Why?
Yes. but we did go into this all last week, and I asked you that question, and you both sort of looked and laughed at me as to...
Well, no, we both said, actually, they'll make it.
Well, no, but when I said, what's the point in these? When you went, well, because the market demands them. You know, there's always going to be a market for these super high-end, super high-powerful, M-badged, RS-badged, whatever it might be, SUVs.
Well, that will compete. That car will probably compete with the Range Rover SV. That'll be that market.
So, yeah, but this is supposed to be a bit... So the X7, I think, is the Range Rover rival. The X8 is supposed to be a lot more focused, a bit more nimble. So...
Maybe it's an SVR version then.
Yeah, so like you know, something that I'm trying to think of a bit like an RS6 and an RS7. You know, this is supposed to be the slightly more sporty faced version, lower riding and more powerful and all these different things. Yeah. So we'll see. You know, we're all big fans of BMW at the minute and some of the renders have been fairly mega, so excited by that. I'm slightly more excited though by another launch which is expected at the end of this month.
I mean, I didn't know about any of
this. No, that's why I'm bringing you the latest car news, Tony, for you to react to.
Brilliant.
Ferrari have announced their next Icona series car is coming.
The LAF replacement?
No.
Ah.
So this is the next in the line of the Monza SP1 and SP2. So, you know, Monza was an Icona, they call it, like iconic, but
okay.
Icona. And it was supposed to be sort of celebrating heritage, but using the best of the modern equipment to sort of, you know, create these special one-off pieces.
Well, Monza's not long been out though, is it?
How can there be another
one then so quickly?
Because they're trying to do this as a sort of series of cars. So Monza's been a couple of years. No, Monza, when did Monza come out? I know the deliveries have only been a while, but Monza launched 2019?
So every 2 or 3 years, they decided to do it.
Yeah. Classic Ferrari. Introduced in 2018.
So every 4 years?
Yeah.
So it's almost like a normal production run car then.
Basically.
I don't know why you're surprised by Ferrari doing something
well,
like that.
No, I'm not anymore. I mean,
yeah. Okay, you know nothing. So basically, I meant to say you're going to say nothing.
Yeah,
you obviously do know some things.
Yeah.
Only a few things.
I knew exactly what you meant.
Yeah. So yes, this car is expected to celebrate the P4,
the iconic
Le Mans car. And supposedly,
it's worth a few quid. That
using
car.
The LAF chassis, so it's the chassis of the LAF with a slightly detuned V12 with more hybrid technology.
Oh, it's got to be detuned. You'd be in a war. It's got to be.
So yeah, theoretically, again, open to the cockpit.
Mm.
Styling cues from that old Le Mans car. Super limited.
No windscreen still.
I think windscreen, because the P4 did. It had that famous glass windscreen. You had shots of. Lawrence Stroll used to own, I think, the last one. I think he's just sold it, but it will be a mega thing. I'm really hoping they're going to unveil it at the Finale Mondiale event because I'm going.
Are you?
I'm going. And I was like, I saw this announcement. I was like, oh, please, please. And it would make sense because the Finale Mondiale is kind of some of the best Ferrari customers. That's their Corsa Clienti. It's the FXX owners. It's the Formula One car owners. They come all together for the world finals of those racing series. It would be the perfect place to unveil the top of the top Icona series car. I will freak out if I get to see that thing.
Yeah, it's always really peculiar, isn't it, our Ferrari. One, they just announce stuff. They never compete with anyone. I always get this, well, Ferrari never do Nürburgring times. Because actually, if you want a Ferrari race car, go and buy a challenge car.
Yep.
You know, that's just their, we don't care, we're Ferrari. And even though they're still making stupid, I think they're making far too many cars personally, they're still like, we're Ferrari, we're just going to keep doing it. Like, you know, our brand is one of, if not the strongest brands in the world.
And you're all going to want all of them. So and,
yeah, we're just going to keep making them. Yeah.
Well, you say that, I thought it'd be fun to run through the current lineup because there are now
too many.
So many. So we've got 812 Superfast.
Yeah.
812 GTS. 296 GTB.
Yeah.
SF90 Stradale. Mm-hmm. SF90 Spider. F8 Tributo. Mm-hmm. F8 Spider. Roma. Portofino M. 812 Competizione. 812 Competizione A Aperta, Monza SP1, Monza SP2, about to be whatever that replacement. That's basically 15 models currently in the Ferrari lineup and LAF replacements any day now.
And an SUV.
And the SUV. I mean,
oh my God,
you're gonna be teetering on 20 car. You're gonna be teetering on 20 models or variations of.
And they probably used to do 4 or 5.
Unreal, isn't it? Ah, but they're selling like bucket loads.
And the
brand gets stronger and stronger, I suppose.
They're making loads of money, aren't they? And these people that buy these cars, it's not the only car they own. They're collectors. They've got too much money.
And next year when Charles Leclerc wins the championship, they're going to be even more in demand.
He's not going to win the championship, is he?
I think Carlos Sainz might be before him.
Past him recently.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Fucking hell. Carlos Sainz, sit down, son. So let's wait and see. But exciting. And no matter what, we'll be talking about all of these sort of new reveals as and when they happen. But fingers crossed, I will get to get up close and personal with that Ferrari Icona car. Wow, I'm so excited. Ferrari event. I can't wait. What a way to end the year.
By the way, think you're married, by the way.
No.
Get excited like that.
Quickly, we have to touch on the new Mercedes SL because we didn't. When Andrew was here last week, it was an SUV special. We didn't really talk about the Mercedes SL.
Uh-huh.
What a thing. I think it looks stunning.
Mm-hmm.
4 seats now, so 2+2.
Yeah.
Good two engine lineup.
Basically.
Yeah, basically. Isn't two and a bench.
Yeah.
Cool thing, huh?
Yeah, cool thing. I done a post on Instagram the other day and said, would you actually have one over a 911? Most people said no, they'd still have the 911.
I think that might be our audience, firstly. We know very Porsche-centric.
Yeah.
But I kind of know what you mean. I really liked it, and I thought, ooh, lovely. Would I have one? Probably not.
And people saying it doesn't compete with a 911. Well, it does.
Oh, bang on. That's exactly
bang
what
on. That's exactly
with.
What he's going 911 after.
911
Cabriolet. Yeah, of course. And as well, the 63 will compete with a Turbo or a Turbo S.
Yeah,
the lower engine one will compete with an S car. You can throw a few other cars in, the M8 convertible, which I definitely have the SL over one of them. Bentley, a couple of people said Bentley Continental GT. I think that's a level up for me in terms of quality. And this SL is going to be a few quid.
It's going to be money, isn't it?
150 odd or something.
Easily.
At that point, you have, for me, you have got to go and have a Porsche or a Bentley.
Yeah, I think Turbo S Cabriolet over the SL. But I always feel like SLs have sold to the sort of slightly quirky buyer in terms of, yeah, you're not getting a Bentley, you're getting an SL. It's sort of weirdly understated, but very capable kind of car.
Yeah.
And if you go back and track their history, yeah, they've always been popular to a certain clientele.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a lot of money. I'm sure very, very good and still desirable. But yeah, I think at that price point, especially once you spec one up, it's going to be a ton.
Oh, it's got to be some car to be even as good as a Turbo S. You know, I, in my personal opinion, bearing in mind, I had one for a while. I think that's the best everyday sports car you can buy, a Turbo S. It is, because it just does everything. It does everything, mate.
Do you think that Turbo S, the 992, is the best Turbo S they've ever done?
Yeah.
Do you?
It's a little bit soulless, but all Turbo S's are soulless. But what I liked about that Turbo S is that, although it wasn't quite as urgent as a GT car, loads faster than a straight line apart from a GT2, but there wouldn't have been a lot in it, by the way. But the steering, it just turned in loads better than the old car. And although they do sometimes feel a little bit of a numb device, you cannot get away with just how good it is. Full stop, mate. You know, like I told you, in the rain, it's good enough in the dry, but when you get in the rain, you think, flipping hell, how good is this car?
Yeah.
It's frightening.
It's always going to be a bit more dynamically exciting than, I think, an SL. So I probably see the SL more of a Bentley rival.
Mm.
It's like, but the S Coupes, you know, I think they've got a popular fan base, but also sometimes get overlooked. A lot of money.
And interestingly as well, being a motor dealer, I will be very, very interested to see how they sell SLs, because SLs, historically, they never sell well. They absolutely plummet in value. They never sell millions of them, which is probably why they've half combined this with the AMG GT car.
Of course.
To try and sell, because they sold a few of them AMG GTs, but actually standalone SLs back in the day, like, they had a little bit of a run when they started to bring the 55 and the 63s out. But they just weren't really good sellers.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And for sure, you're expecting the AMG GT will get a facelift or an upgrade soon, which will look very similar and be based on the same sort of, you know, platform. So, yeah, interesting to see. I like it because I like the badge name. I think it's a very cool...
Very pretty car.
Very pretty car. It'll be very nice. But I think it probably will be maybe a little unengaging.
Lovely
to try.
Inside as well, to be fair. Yeah. But what new Mercedes isn't, but actually what I found with new Mercedes is that when they get to 3 or 4 years old, they instantly start to look dated because they update their interiors so quickly. It's like we said about it last week with the new Range Rover now. Look how lovely that looks. And it instantly makes the old car look 20 years old.
It's crazy. And that's always the problem when you're buying the German stuff, is the rate at which they upgrade and change, even the small interior upgrades. And actually, you know, this perfect segue into the F-Pace I'm in at the moment.
Okay.
So I sent the F-Type R back for a service with Jag. So they're doing a service after the trip down to Monaco and stuff. And they just lent me a bog standard entry level. I think they call it the D165. Mm-hmm. So it's a diesel, brand new F-Pace.
Yep.
I think it starts at 36 odd grand, something like that. Oh my God, the interior, stunning. It's not the same as the new SVI, big old screens, lovely knurled kind of dials for the aircon and stuff like that, lovely stitching. It's got loads of kit on it because obviously it's a press car, so they've got the full sound system, they've got the 3D cameras, surround cameras. Like, it is such a nice place to be. And I've had that car now for a week. I've been up to Gaydon, up to Jaguar HQ, been over to my parents in Wiltshire. I've been in and around London non-stop. I've been out to Surrey, stuff like that. One tank of fuel.
Yeah,
still got 140 miles left on the range. Yeah, it's insane.
You won't do that in an I-Pace.
No, you wouldn't do that in an I-Pace. I'd have to be charging it. But it is such a nice car. And it's got me sort of thinking, oh my God, the levels of quality you can get now that all these cars have had to step up so high without needing to get the premium engine.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need the SVR.
Yeah.
You can run around in that and it still just ticks so many boxes and is on such a high level. But, well, maybe not with Jag. If you had the Merc, in 3 years' time, it's going to be outdated.
Yeah, Yeah, but just cars in general now, mate. Even a Vauxhall Corsa or a little Fiesta. I mean, they are a few quid now. They're not 10,000 quid like they used to be. They're 20,000 quid or more. I mean, that little Peugeot 208 thing.
Yeah.
Flipping hell, it's like a spaceship inside.
It's mad, isn't it?
But you always go back and think, oh, it's like 10,000 quid or something. But it ain't. It's 25,000 quid. So they are a few quid. And you sent me something the other day, and actually I got emailed it, DM'd it and everything.
Oh yes, I know, go on.
This RS3.
Oh my God.
So you go.
It was a brand new RS3, theoretically. Yeah. One of, if not the first in the UK. Mm-hmm.
For sale,
posted on Auto Trader with a price of 78,990.
So that car would have been about 10 grand over list. Would have been late 60s. No, it was a launch edition car with some bits on it. So it would have been, I would say, 10, 15 grand over-ish. But flipping hell. I mean, people go in about that, how much that new M3 is, and you know, the RS6 is. We're nearly 80,000 quid for a hot hatch now.
RS3.
I mean, it makes the old car, by the way, unbelievable value.
Unbelievable.
At 40,000 quid.
Who are we saying this the other day? I think it's almost too much now, that RS3.
Too much money.
Well, but also too much car. Like, that's too much going on for, because at 80 grand, if you want all this dynamic capability, just go and buy a GT4, you know, and just get like, if you really, that's what you're trying to do, at 80 grand, there's a million other options.
The thing is, mate, as well, that the I mean, I've not driven the new RS3 yet, but from what I can gather, apart from the drift mode and the two different dials inside, you know, the mm-hmm, two mm-hmm. dashes, is it really any different to the old car? Really? I mean, even the old car's not a bad place to sit still. It's still fairly modern, mate. It just hasn't got them two screens, but it's still got the 400 horsepower five-pot engine in it. You know, so take the drift mode away, you're paying 30,000 quid, basically, for a facelifted car.
It doesn't even look that different, I don't think.
No. I mean, how much different can you make it? You know, like, it's just a lot of money, 78 grand.
Oh. Terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, someone out there will pay that money. So
we'll see.
We'll see. Anyway, that brings an end to today's episode. As I say, it didn't go at all to the plan that I thought it would.
No. But
we had some interesting conversations anyway.
We do.
We will be back with you, of course, next week. I'm then hitting the road. I've got a bit of travel to do, actually, for the sort of latter part of this year. So we're going to have to sort of pre-record some episodes, I think, in advance. Probably going to do another Rate My Ride. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Oh, it has been a while. I like them.
A lot of people have been sending their sort of photos of their cars in and stuff like that. So maybe, well, I'll keep you posted on that. But maybe a Rate My Ride coming soon. We've got some other nice plans ahead. So yeah, make sure to stay tuned. If you're watching here on YouTube, hit subscribe, turn on notifications. A reminder, we're trying to get to 50K by the end of the year. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And yeah, we'll be back with you next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.